Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, members and guests. Can you hear me? Is this working?
I'll get up a bit higher and you'll be right.
Is that better?
Yes.
I had to switch it on far enough. Welcome, members and guests. I'm Brian Mullane. I lived in Mitcham from 1944 to 1957. And I lived in the Mitcham Post Office. If I turn this on, it might work. And this is a photo that I pinched from Google Earth, Google Maps, Street View. It's probably from about 2021. And the house we lived in is all this bit here, down to that level there. The porch is different, but they've retained the look of what the porch was like. You'll see a few more photographs of that building, which is probably legendary in the annals of Mitcham history. Everybody seems to have taken photos of it. I don't have a lot of information about the early days of post in Mitcham, but I've had a guess at a lot of it, and I've been able to discover quite a bit about it from newspaper reports mostly. The first mails came to Mitcham initially by Cobb & Co. and I presume other types of coaches or horse-drawn vehicles back in the early days, from the 1850s and thereafter. By the 1870s, 1874 I think, the first rail came to Mitcham. Sorry, 1872. 1874, the first post office was at the Mitcham station. And the main reason for that is, of course, Cobb & Co. were out of business because the trains were taking passengers and they delivered mails. And the mail centre, the post office, would have been in this building here, which some of you will remember. This is on what we call the downside of the station. Up is towards the city, down is away from the city. And I can remember, because we had a shop and we had all sorts of parcels delivered, everything from toys to magazines, rolled up Gordon and Gotch parcels wrapped in brown paper with the name of the shop on it. And coming home from school on the train, I'd get off the train and there was a window here. One was for selling tickets and one was for dispensing parcels, and I would wait there and I'd take whatever parcels were there back home to the shop. Now, I don't know exactly when, and there's no real way of knowing that I've been able to find. I guess if we researched some of the more detailed research papers that do exist, which I haven't had access to because we've got to go into the library and spend hours going through stuff. My guess is that certainly after 1887, because 1887, this is August 87, there was a deputation from Mitcham to the Postmaster General asking that the post office be taken from the railway station and brought to the village, to the town. Now, the town in those days, this is back then, was centred on, it was further down towards Nunawading, around what is now McGlone Street, although there were shops around the station area. And they asked for two mails instead of one a day. And the mail came on a special van. It's called a mail van, a carriage on the train. So a short carriage, and the guard on the train was responsible for dumping the stuff onto the station, and the porter would then take it in and sort it and have the mail ready for the people to pick up. Now, somewhere around, and I'm guessing, after that date, 1887, a new post office was established in a shop owned by the McGlones, John and Eliza McGlone. And there's a number of reports, a number of histories of Mitcham that include a statement that Eliza McGlone, and this is a photo from our collection at the Historical Society here, that she was the first postmistress. So the post office was established in a shop near the Harvest Home Hotel, which was on the corner of McLone Street, as you know it today. And this is sort of coincidental with the closure of the Harvest Home Hotel in that about that time. And I would guess that the reason that they closed the hotel was they had substantial properties, and Eliza was now a salaried postmistress. So the income from the hotels, from the properties, the police station, and there were three shops, which I'll show you later, on a map later. So they, by 1905, they were earning an income of something over £100 income. So with her salary, which I think was somewhere around £60 or £70, that would have been a really high income in those days. The average wage was possibly around £25, £26 a year. Now, this first map is taken from the official map that was which shows the area between, there's a Springvale Road over here, Springfield Road down there, Mitcham Road, Old Mitcham Road, Whitehorse Road of course, and this is Heatherdale Road. So the area that, this is Mitcham Road, so the area here, probably about that much of that area, because this is about where Station Street is, somewhere around a small patch there, about 5, 6, 7 acres, is what the McLones owned. And they owned it before this map was actually registered. But the map is actually gazetted, a gazetted map. I got it from the State Library of Victoria. And it was obviously out of date, because it was gazetted in 1878. And that part of that lot, that's lot 120, is owned by the McLones already. And the Harvest Home Hotel was established in 1873. But there's reports that they actually lived there, or lived in Mitcham. They were early settlers in the early 1860s. I haven't been able to research all that, and it's not really all that relevant for this purpose. But by that stage, they had also donated an acre of that land to the Catholic Church, which was established in 1872, well before 1878. So, as I said before, as I mentioned, it's very difficult to know exactly what the early history is of the males, and it's based to some extent on the development of the land sales in that area. So that's about all I need to say about that. Now this one is a sale, it's in 1921, so it's an auction sale of the whole of the area that the McLones owned at that stage. And this is the bit of land for the church they gave away. So I'm assuming that at some stage, when that subdivision took place, they owned all of that land from that corner down there, right across. And this is proposed new siding for an electrical substation for the electrification of the train line to Lilydale. And at that stage, it was in 1921, it was to Box Hill, and it got to Mitcham in 1923, the electrification. And my mother talks about the people who are working on this project coming to their house with their billies to get hot water for their tea, for morning and afternoon tea. And that was where they lived. That was when my mother was born, and lived there until she was eight, I think. So that was the Harvest Home Hotel on the corner, and I think it probably occupied those three blocks there, which I guess would be about half an acre. Then there were these two shops. This one had various purposes over the years, and so did that one, but it was the post office from the earliest days until 1924, when my grandparents moved out into the new post office, sorry, up on that corner there. This was the police station, and had been for some time. There had been another house here, which is mentioned in the next slide. And I think from an old photograph I've seen of that frontage of that area, that was the school teacher's residence back in the early days. But suffice it to say, all of this land was owned by the McGlones, and she was the postmistress here, and I'll talk about some of that in a minute. And this, all of that property was offered for sale in 1905. So 1924 was that previous slide, I think. No, 1921. 1905, it was offered for sale, all of that, and it describes the buildings that I just pointed out to you. Oh, that's just, I just wanted to have an idea of what the buildings were like, and I've got this photo, that's my mother, probably about 1918, something like that. And this building here is the other shop next door, the two shops. These two shops, wooden shops, and those are the same two wooden shops. They both had a little laneway down the side of them, with a gate to go out to the street. And obviously weatherboard. And they would have, the front of these would have, because these are right next door, so there's that gap, that little block, that's narrow strip of land, and then the two shops are just down here. That's the Harvest Home Hotel, and with the McGlones outside it. And this, it doesn't say what date it is, but I don't know, will you have a guess? But that's the type of construction. I can remember walking down with my mother to those shops, and there was this raised footpath of wooden underneath a veranda, and the shop fronts were very similar to that. Not the sort of shop, you know, big display windows, because they couldn't make that glass that size back in the 1860s or 70s when that was built. I mean, I guess they could have, but it would have been extraordinarily expensive. Now, I've lost myself. Just as an aside, I wanted to mention the telegraphic communications, because in that previous slide here, it describes this as the double-fronted house containing six rooms, an office, large shop and outhouses known as the Mitcham Post and Telegraph Office. Now, communications in those days, from early 1850s, by mail were very, very slow, and telegraphic communications were quite important. The railway, for example, and commercial enterprises, government, if you think of the Eureka Stockade and those other uprisings and the goldfields and commerce, people buying land and people squatting or settling or selecting land, big distances, you had to get in fast, staking out gold claims and having those claims registered in Melbourne, etc. So mail was pretty slow, so the telegraph was very important. And I was talking to an old postie who worked as relieving postmaster in Mitcham and other suburbs, and he told me that even in the 1970s when he was working, he had to be able to be competent on Morse code. Now, I will remember the station staff at Mitcham, when you know, as kids, you know, look at all the stuff and see him tapping away on the thing to say when the train had gone, the next train. So the next station, people down the line knew that the train was on time or otherwise. Anyway, that was a very important part of the, and I'm assuming that both Bertha, that's my grandmother, and Patrick, who's my grandfather, would have been competent at Morse code for that reason. And telephones didn't come in until, well, the Box Hill Exchange opened in 1899, and there was only one phone line into Mitcham. One public phone in Mitcham when the post office opened. There were some private lines. Not sure how they got them because the... anyway, I'll talk about that in a minute. Oh, sorry, I just wanted to mention That's my mother. So these are my two grandparents. That's my mother, Mary Markham. Bertha Nay Cruz. She was born Cruz. The christening gown that my brother Brendan is wearing in this photograph, which is now part of the collection here, was made for her by her mother in 1881-82. She was christened in 1882. Right, so that's who they, those people are. That's my other grandmother, Nalaine. Now, just before I go on, I just want to have to read this because I can't remember it exactly. I should have had a slide for it, it would have been easier. I've indicated it's very difficult to find out exactly who and what was happening back in the early days. So I'll just recite this. I've used various sources, Sands and McDougall's and newspapers in the main. 1884, when the post service started, was would have been the railway post office, postmaster or, sorry, the railway station master. And he would have, as part of his duties, he got an allowance and he would have done the sorting, and the contractor would then have taken the mails and delivered them, except for the outer areas where they would have been delivered, where they would have been, people would have had to come in and pick them up. 1889, Eliza McGlone was definitely, she was age 54 at that stage, which is a really interesting fact. Don't know when she finished. 1900, Sands and McDougall says that Mrs. Mary Duval was the postmistress. 1905, Sands and McDougall's again. Eliza McGlone's back as the postmistress. There's a mention of a Miss Thomas in a newspaper article, 1908, being given a presentation at a function as she was leaving the position of postmistress. I must, as an aside, I might say there's a reference to that Miss Thomas having married Patrick, or Paddy Markham, as it says in the article, and gone on to be postmistress and whatever, absolutely incorrect, because he was already married to Bertha by that stage. 1910, Sands and McDougall's Miss A.O. Sullivan. In 1913, there's a record of Bertha Markham being appointed as postmistress vicey, that is, instead of or in place of Eliza McGlone. So Eliza McGlone had been back in there up until somewhere between 1910 and 1913. And at that stage, she was 78. So she was going pretty well. So 1913, Bertha was appointed, and until 1952, when she became too ill to operate the post office, she was continuously postmistress, although she was relieved by my grandfather, Patrick, and sometimes by my mother for brief periods when both of them were unavailable. So in late 1942, she had to retire, and Patrick was appointed, and he died in, they both died in 1944. So he lasted until 1944. But she'd been postmistress for almost 30 years, so 29, over 29 and a half years. But talking about postal staff, contractors, postmen, I don't know who they were. I can't find any records. And because they're contractors, they don't get gazetted. However, my mother wrote quite a lot of, she liked to write stuff, notes and stuff about the history and her life in Mitcham. And in one of those, she said that, I'll just quote her. After Arthur Gaillard, our postman, finished, we had a chap called Weymouth, and then later still Les Miller, and of course Owen Loftus. So I think you'd have to be pretty old to know and recognise any of those names. But they're some of the names, they're the only names I know of in the period that I'm talking about. Bertha and Patrick were married in 1910, at which time Patrick was a businessman in the city, and I'm not sure, Bertha was a seamstress, a tailoress, and had worked for Craig Williamson's at some stage. And I'm not sure exactly what the evolution of their relationship was that had her end up as postmistress and him as... he was still working in the city, but as her partner in that business. So, by about 1920, Bertha Markham was well ensconced as the Mitcham Post mistress, because she'd started in 1913, as I said, 1st of January 1913. And he, Patrick, had wanted to get the business into the centre of town, which he saw as being that commercial area between the Station Street and Mitcham Road, which we all know is where the main part of town has been for so many years. But the site where the post office stands today, and all of the those sites, going the wrong way, all of these sites along here, well, this had been sold off in that 1905 sale that I mentioned before, that we saw the little advert for. They were all sold off. 1912, they were all sold off. And these ones were actually, by and large, were developed. You've got photographs that show the home hotel on the corner and buildings down here. I think there was a vacant lot. When we knew it, there was a substantial building on that site there that was the station master's residence. And but these, and I think the hay and corn site, anyway, I won't start guessing. But these sites were the ones, they were sold off in 1912, but they were still unbuilt on. There's photographs that show there was nothing built there until about 1921, 22, maybe even 23. So, and the price of this was quite high, double the price of that in 1912. And at some stage, Patrick's bought that bought that property. Right. So I'll move on quickly to a. To the brick post office. That's the building that was the post office. It was the post office from 1924 when it opened until 1944 when both Patrick and Bertha died and the post office took over the postal service. They came into the building, into our building, physically took over the operation and within a couple of months, they'd moved up to what had been, I think, Gray's Hardware or second-hand shop or whatever it was. It was Gray's building, a substantial brick building, one of the first buildings on that little block of shops. Now, this is the original original architect drawing by. I can't read that. Sydney Smith, Ogg and Serples, architects of 101 Queen Street, Melbourne. Quite a well-known architect of that period. And it's quite a large document. It's about the same size as that image you can see there. And it's on display here, so when we break, you can have a look at that. And also that one of those advertisement, big advertisement posters is there. And so I'll just use some smaller segments of it to show you what's what and where it is. You won't be able to see it, but there are some abbreviations on it here, like this SW, which is sleeper wall, which are these little vague lines you can see there on the ground floor, and they enable the floor bearers to be spanning so that the floor can be properly supported. RSJs, you'll see RSJs particularly out supporting the veranda that ran around the front of the shop, and all of these walls here, when you look at the building, it carries a lot of brickwork, and these carry the double storied parts of the building. Now, the post office, this is the post office here, the post office section, which I assume that the Postmaster General rented from the Markhams. This area here was the shop area, so that was the not a news agency, but as close as he could get to a news agency. It would sell magazines, books and stationery, because she was a seamstress, haberdashery and all those sorts of things. Sort of a mixed bag of that nature. And this was a separate shop, which was rented out separately, and it started off as a tobacconist and barber or hairdresser and tobacconist. And this area at the back here, all of this area obviously is the part of our living quarters. So our private entrance was through the gate here, down the path to the porch, into the hall, upstairs to the bedrooms, which you'll look at in a minute, and out the back, the dining room, sort of the corridor through here, kitchen, pantry, and you'll see there's a large rainwater tank here, and there's another one on the first floor. Now, this is the earliest photo I have of the building, and it's pretty much as most people who know the place have seen it. It's remained for almost 100 years, and it's the hairdresser and tobacconist. Post office here, this is probably 1926 because there's a public phone out here. It looks as though it's been there for a while. So this is the post office area. It's hard to tell what it looks as though it's just advertising stuff in here. But you can see there's the only light, I'll talk about those in a second. And this is the more detail of it. You can see the tiling here. That was also, there were bluey-green tiles. I think they're possibly from ATTC, because my grandfather was a good mate of Walker's, the owner of ATTC. And the bricks may even have come from there as well. What's happened? Yeah. Well, I was just going to talk about the
sorry to interrupt, that was the Tessellated Tile Company.
Yes, I'm sorry, yes. Australian Tessellated Tile Company, which is just across the railway line from the building.
Which was your bedroom?
That one. Well, it was that one. And then it was that one. And then it was that one, and then it was that one. Basically, my parents lived in this bedroom. We had a piano here. There was a cot here, usually. And as the next child came along, they went into and they'd be shuffling. And
how many of you?
We ended up in that building, 9 children. Yeah, and this was, it says sitting room, but it was in fact the what we called the studio. And I'll talk about that in a minute. And you'll notice that there's no toilet in the bathroom. The only toilet was outside, and I'll talk about that a bit more. And that, I think, was a wood chip heater, if anyone remembers them. You remember the gas heaters over the baths? When I was there, living there, we had a gas heater. But originally, I think that would have been a chip heater. And that tank is on the roof of the back part of the building, and it's right above the kitchen, and would have served water into the kitchen only. These are just some photos. I'll go back to this. Oh, no, wrong. This is some photos of taken from the veranda of the shop. And I don't know exactly what the dates are. You could have a guess based on the sorts of vehicles. Raleigh's Bakery, you can see the, for those of you who know, this is Mitcham Road just here. You can see that sign, that's Mitcham Road going across between that milk bar there. And of course the RSL Hall. And just another view of it, showing the cenotaph. Now this is the earliest photo I've got. Sorry, this is the only photograph I've got of the building under construction. This is the old Hill Hotel, or O'Callaghan's Hotel, on the corner of Station Street. So this is Station Street. Not even to lock up stage. And you can see that there's nothing here. A great heap of timber. You can imagine how long that would last these days if it was left out like that overnight. I've gone into a lot more detail in my talk, but you're going to get bored if I keep on going back over all of that. Now this one, talking about the... and it's interesting because PJ Markham started this Mitcham and Vermont Progress Association, in my view, mainly so he could get people organised, mainly to do stuff that he wanted to have done. And this was one of them, because he was part of the post office. He got a letter from the Prime Minister at their meeting, including a communication from the Postmaster General to the effect that they weren't going to give a phone box to Mitcham connecting to the Box Hill Exchange because Mitcham was outside the metropolitan telephone area. And I remember the first phone number that I've seen it written was Ringwood. I don't know what the number is, 123. So it was a Ringwood Exchange. And I haven't been able to quite work out or find out when Ringwood Exchange opened. But it was a Ringwood number. And of course, when they didn't get their way, they decided they were going to send a deputation to the Prime Minister. What else would you do? Well, in 1924, the Prime Minister was in Melbourne because Parliament was held in the Victorian State Parliament building, and Victoria Parliament was in the exhibition building. Now, this is a photograph taken, I think, very shortly after the building was completed. This is the outbuilding here. You can see these buildings down the back here. They're all on Station Street on the east side. And these, are they still extant? They preceded the post office building, and every photo I've seen of that street has had them in it. And this guy's about to walk across what today is Quality Way. Right, that's our back lane, and it's now called Quality Way. Oh, the other thing is, if you notice, the reservoir, Mitcham Reservoir's up the back there, no tower. Right, so there was no water pressure in the system. They had the reservoir there, but hardly any reticulation had been commenced, let alone completed. They had some, but it was mostly on the lower side, or the less elevated parts of Mitcham. And I've dated it by the builder's rubble there. And this one's one of my mother, and the builder's rubble's still there, so it could even be on the same day. And you can see a lot of pictures we have in our backyard has those buildings poking out up above the side fence. The jewellers and the tea rooms, Drake and Company down there. Can't remember what those ones were.
They were closer to the railway line.
Beg your pardon?
They were closer to the railway line. They were,
well, if you look at that one, that's in there. That's the railway line. This is the post office here.
I was thinking it was across the laneway.
No, that's the laneway. There's a house there.
Thank you.
Station Street, and these are the shops. I remember that as Drake and Company. I remember these as Hannum's Electrical and the Jewellers and the Bacon Block of Land. So that's the Anzac Day march, I think around 1950. And because I don't know anything much about the postal service in Mitcham, I've had to rely on this. It's a contractor's, an advert for a contractor to apply to do the mails. And you can see all the it's got to be by horseback or on bicycle. This is 1926, so it's about the same year. And it's got a description. It's a Hallidays in Mitcham Road. So you've got to know where Hallidays is in Mitcham Road. Doncaster Road to Quarry Road to Wars and Stocks in Dunlavin Road, etc., etc. And you've got Devoit Senior in Mitcham Road, including Percy Street, etc., etc. And tenderers are invited to state extra price required for the inclusion of Cook Street from White Horse Road to Burnett Street and including Burnett Street from Cook Street to Thomas Street. Very complicated. But that was, so it was bicycle, and you're not allowed to have anyone under under 16, I think it is, involved in the service. Now, oops. I'm trying to catch up with my notes. So getting back to the building itself, this is an image of a plan of drainage. It was a project in 1939-1940. The major part of this work was connecting the property to the town water supply, because the tower had been built by this stage, in fact years before, and connecting to the sewerage system. The major part of the work was to replace what had been an antiquated system of drainage. I think it all went into a sump and then it flowed over into the overflow went into the street, a bit like our septic systems as we know them today. So there was the sewer main was installed down that right of way, the quality way, and there was connections to all out of the house and outbuildings into there. So the extent of the works was basically to put a tap and a basin inside the building, a tap and a gully trap outside the building to service the shop areas, put a trough and a sink in the kitchen, and to install, redo the whole bathroom upstairs, take out the bath, replace the bath and sink, and to install an indoor toilet upstairs. Now, this is the previous provision for toilet facilities. It's that shed in the backyard, that outbuilding, which didn't appear, when I saw that photo, didn't appear to have a door on it. But there's two, what they call Shed A and Shed B, and it's got these things here, which I'd have expected to see WC, water closet, toilets, but it's got this funny shape, and they're called ECs. Well, Dr. Google tells me that that's an earth cabinet, or earth closet, where everything gets composted, and when it's composted and whatever, you go and dig it in your garden. Now, I don't know whether Patrick would have been up to that, but that's what it was. So that was replaced. Oh, sorry, I've just mentioned, well, we've got it. This is on, because it's on the same section of that large drawing. This is the water tank that serves the bathroom in the upper floor. So it's quite a large tank, can't remember the size of it, but it's on an RSJ platform that's built into this chimney, and that's sort of about waist height. So that's how they got head to be able to have the taps work. So obviously no showers, not until they had the town supply. But this arrangement was replaced by this arrangement. So this shed was going, and then there's a toilet here, but there's one, two, three other connections to the main. And I think one of them was a workroom, one was a laundry, and it may not have even... there may have been two connections for the laundry, one for the trough and one for the copper, because that was all we had. And that was to go. And the provision was made for this change as well, because the boundary is just out here. And there was a gate here, and my mother used to park her little car in there, behind that outhouse. And part of the plan, part of the plan was to replace that arrangement with a proper garage, which is what was there when we were living there. And the back corner of the property was cut off, and a gate put in that way, and this gate was removed. So our firewood was delivered by a truck coming up the lane, backing in, dumping it in the backyard, and then we had to put it all into an old chook shed under cover. Oh, it's just a couple of photos. That's my mother outside of the front part of the house on the front lawn, which isn't quite lawn at that minute. I think those blinds are the same ones that we had when I was there. And this is around 1930, I'm guessing. She was a fanatical pet lady and had this beautiful collie that was a pet and a galah and always had pet chooks. Now that's looking west. So we're looking, this little track here, that's Mitcham Road. That's that Gray's store I told you about, which I think was the first building built on that set of that block of land. That's where the, that's of course the post office, and that's the building that was the, had been the O'Callaghan's Hill Hotel. And so it's definitely around 1924-25. And that's it around 1942, somewhere like that. And again, it shows these very substantial buildings all the way up to Mitcham Road. And when my memory of that, my strongest memory of that is English's delicatessen. But that was just post-war, about 1948. Now, talk about the Malayan. I've jumped a bit, haven't I? The Malayan occupation of the building. So, both my grandparents were involved in the building of the building. They were in the building until they died, and they both died. They died within 3 months of one another. In fact, 2 months of one another, in May and July 1944. I had been born on in March 1944. So my memories are from about 5 years later. So my mother inherited the building, and she had married my father, Harold Malay, in 1942. They had one child, in fact they had two, that was counting me. Married in, that's their wedding photo. And that was in the studio in that building, in the post office building, as mentioned before. And he was a photographer. She'd been a photographer, child photographer, got her business cards for probably about maybe 8 or 10 years. And her mother was a photographer, and possibly her father even. So that's why we have so much pictorial stuff to be able to show you. That they were into photography well before most people had a camera.
So did you use the sitting room ever, or was it just always a studio?
Always a studio.
Where did you sit?
In the backyard. bedrooms, in the dining room, sometimes in the kitchen, but not a huge residential area, except there were a lot of bedrooms. That space was reserved for professional photography stuff. And right up until we left Mitcham, my father did weddings and he took school photographs. He'd take a day off work to do school photographs for secondary college or state schools or whatever. And then flog it. Everybody knows what school photographs are. And so it was a good line of business. He also did development of printing. Developing and printing at night, so come home from work, having been a photographer, developing and printing and taking photographs all day, come home and work from, I don't know, 9 o'clock at night till 11, and sometimes we gave him a hand, which was good. So when we reverted from the post office to a shop, because my mother inherited the building and she decided she was going to keep on going, even with two little kids and maybe one on the way. So the post office bit became incorporated into the shop. This wasn't let out, wasn't rented out. And I've just drawn this in myself just to show you roughly what it was like. This was the entry from the house into the shop building. This was the dark room. And by this stage it had extended the plumbing, so we were able to use chemicals and do all of that sort of stuff. And this was a work room, but it also was a storeroom, because as part of the shop business we had lay-bys and they had to be stored somewhere. There was a table here, like a kitchen table sort of thing. A lot of the stuff was stored under there, and it was always a challenge when somebody came in and wanted to redeem their lay-by and where the hell do you look for it, because some of it was stored under there, some of it was in shelving here, some of it was in stacks in here. And come Christmas time, you can imagine, like from November and December leading up to Christmas, we sort of stopped getting people putting things on lay-by by the start of December, but by then it was pretty hectic. So all of that was now the shop, and this was all dedicated to toys. All along these areas, I remember bicycles, tricycles sitting up on this sorting bench here. And the telephone box was gone. I can't remember exactly what that was at that stage. So everything else was the same. The counters were the same. This was the same. There had been a big cash drawer in each of these. These are wooden, about 2 inches thick counters. Beautiful counters. Not benches. Pop counters, and I can remember you get a great pile of money with all different denominations and whizzing it all out and stacking it up in nice neat rows, and the florins and shillings and sixpences and threepences and pennies and halfpennies. No notes, we weren't allowed to touch the notes. And there was a drawer there for the post office stuff, which also held the stamps and the other forms, money orders and things like that had to be accounted for, not just cash. And there was a separate one here, another lockable drawer over here for money for the shop, all the shop stuff. And that one was discontinued, I can't remember what was in it. But there used to be cigarettes and stuff underneath the counter here. And in season we had fireworks, all sorts of fireworks. Tobacco and all that sort of thing was down there. That's Christmas at our place. My father would put on the suit, trying to drum up a bit of trade, and my mother would build a chimney thing with a slot in it for letters from kids, and the letters would be handed to the mother, hoping that she'd buy whatever the kids seen in the shop and wanted. And I've talked about the photographic survey. Markham's Photographic Service. It stayed as Markham's Photographic Service even after that. And that was a sign that was under the veranda, the shop. This is in the studio. I'll just give you some examples of the sort of work my mother did. My father would do the photography, or maybe my mother did this one, and she would touch up so it became look like a colour print, the sepia that's been coloured. That's me. And this was one that we did. We did a lot of, not a lot, we did some commercial stuff for a church, and that was always gratis. And there's some locals in there. That's, I think it's Pat, it's either Pat or Chris Dale. Yes, Christine Darville. That's my mother, Mary Mullane, at that stage. That's me, Brian. That's not Nils, that's Jim Toivonen, my sister Mary, my brother Brendan, my sister Gabriel, and that's Ida Toivonen. So we had three ring-ins, and it was used as the official photo for the Rosary Crusade back in 1951. And it appeared in The Advocate. And I guess the studio was the most presentable room in the house, and that was the, if you remember, all the bridal parties storming up the stairs, the wooden staircase, down the corridor between the bedrooms, and told to stay in the room or get out in the backyard or whatever. And this is actually a photo of the new car in about 1949. That's a 1932 Hutmobile for those aficionados. But you can see that the shop and all of this area is exactly the same. This is just showing the back of the window to the shop there, and all this car, this, you know, the trellising and all that stuff, that was all, as I remember it. That's us in Quality Way at Back Lane. And that lovely house that we saw in that photo previously that had a nice capping on the roof ridge, that's gone, and Mr. Tuck has bulldozed that and is using it as a plumber's yard. Oh, it's Christmas some year. 1945, and that's me on the left. My brother's carting my sister around on an inverted bike. He was never safety conscious. Well, he was safety conscious for himself, but. And that's me in the bib at the front. And that's just another one of us. And you can see all those shops still at the back. And there's Drake & Company sign there. And we're all very fit and healthy. I think that might be the same day with the Hutmobile. I'm not sure why it would be photographed there. But again, it's in Quality Way, 1949. Just another one of the yard. And this one again features the Crew's christening gown. That's the youngest one from 1953. And it's the first one we've got at the front of the new the Nissen Hut type St. John's Church, if you remember that. And that's us again. This time we're 10. And again, the christening gown. And that's the youngest one and the last one. Thank goodness.
Where are you?
No, that's me.
You shouldn't be. I know. I'll
let
everyone else
know. Well, you want me to recite the litany of the Malayans?
You look very handsome.
Brendan, Brian, Mary, Gabriel, Philip in the back, Damien, Julian, Catherine, Adrian, Stephen. And that's exactly within a week of the year after we left Mitcham. We left Mitcham on the 12th of June, 1957, and that's about a year later, 1958.
Where was that taken?
That one? That's outside the St. Benedict's Catholic Church in Burwood.
Thank you.
In Warrigal Road, near the junction with Burwood Highway. At the front, yeah. Big sheet of glass at the front, right, basically, yeah. And that tree's in the front yard of what was then the presbytery. But it wasn't a presbytery for long because the new priest had to have a new one. It became
What's the little boy doing, your little brother? Is he sneezing or what?
Julian? I think he's pretty bored with the whole process. We've been in the church for an hour or something and we've had enough. And I'll leave this one up just while we have a chat about any of the stuff you want to talk about. I was interested in it because it shows the State Savings Bank at the same sort of stage as that one I showed you, the post office, in the course of construction. There's no windows, there's scaffolding here holding up what's going to become a platform, a walkout platform, and there are lots of photographs around taken from that platform, as there have been from the veranda at the post office from our family. The bank manager must have been, or his wife must have been a bit of a photographer, and there's quite a few early shots. But according to newspaper reports, the bank opened in March or April, or February it said it would be open in March, so I'm assuming it would probably have been April, in 1929. So I can leave that up there. That's it for me, thank you. Any questions? Oh, the Kodak sign, yes, that Kodak sign. A lot of things that I shouldn't have done. I rescued from going into a skip when my mother had to sell the Burwood property and move into something smaller after my father had died. And so I rescued that, and I'm not sure why I rescued it, but ultimately approved. I rescued it to leave it here for people to see in the museum as part of the photographic display in there.
Is it iris clone? Is that an
Eliza McGlone?
Yeah, that's it. Is that her hair or a hat?
How do I get back there?
It's one of the first ones.
Yeah.
I think she had flowers in
it. Yeah, she was on right past there.
Yeah.
I think it is a hat.
Oh, it is a hat.
It's a hat.
It's a fair question.
Any other questions? Any?
That was a good question, though.
That was a good question, yeah. It was very on topic.
Yeah. Well, as to what people's fashion was,
yeah. I'm sorry about this, but there was a particular photo of facade looking over some back, and I was just curious.
Over which?
There was a particular photo of facades looking out over probably Whitehorse Road that I was just, I couldn't place it. Sorry about this.
That's all right.
No,
it keeps him on his toes.
This is all.
It's the next one.
Well, that's Borelli's, diagonally opposite the post office.
What's Borelli's?
It was a bakery for quite a lot. Borelli started off, as I remember, he started off...
I'm only from Blackburn, but I'm not that familiar with Bitchin. I'm sorry.
There was a Borelli's in the...
Thank you for asking. Thank you for telling me.
In the brick building on the McGlone estate, there was a Borelli, a butcher. And I'm assuming that either he or his sons turned to baking, because when I was in Mitchin, this was Borelli's bakery. They obviously had Sennett's ice cream. There were butchers there and a couple more butchers. There were three butchers and just in the space of like five or seven shops.
Sorry, I just can't recognise it. No. Which way is
Britannia Street?
That's Britannia Street.
Oh, thank you.
Whitehorse Road.
Thank you.
Which church is that?
Is that now the thing that's got the pub on top that looks straight out?
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know Mitchum at all now.
Yeah.
There's almost nothing I recognise. Even the church that I knew is gone. So. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brian. Oh, sorry.
Now, do we know anything about what might happen to the building now?
Well,
there is a